Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 199 for June 15th, 2009. I'm a dinner jacket. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2 and follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by GoToMeeting. Business travel can kill your company's profits, so do more, save more, and travel less with GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/twit. It's time for TWiT, the show that covers all things technology, and a great panel we have here assembled around the table virtually, so to speak. From his getaway in beautiful Washington State, John C. Dvorak.
Hello.
Hey, John, good to talk to you. Also, just back from his getaway, he had a nice, I hope, vacation, Dwight Silverman of the Houston Chronicle. Hey, Dwight.
Hey, it's good to be back and great to be doing this as my first semi-official act back after taking my daughter up to orientation at the University of Missouri.
So that's where she's going, huh? Fall. That's great. Yep. Congratulations. Yep. So I remember the last time we, a few months ago, we talked, you were doing college tours and getting ready for all that. And so she's going to what do you call it? Old Mizzou? Is that it?
It's called Mizzou, right?
Mizzou.
Incredibly, incredibly rich in tradition.
Oh, that's
it was
neat.
The school that started homecoming, and it is the first journalism school in the U.S.
Is she's not going to study journalism.
Yes, she is. Uh-huh. Yes, as much as I try to dissuade her, that's what she wants to do.
You must be very
and she's good at it.
Worried and proud.
Yeah.
But yes.
And buggy whip manufacturing.
That's right. There's a future in buggy whips, kids.
Well, she's going into the convergence. She's going to do, she's going to focus on online. So at least she's taking the right track.
Well, I think it's actually great. I mean, you still need the traditions of journalism. You still need the ethics, the background. I think that's, online journalists are still journalists. It's just because the dead tree newspaper is going away doesn't mean that we don't need journalists.
Right, right.
Also here, Doug Kay, the proto-podcaster, the guy who I think you're now officially the longest continuous running podcaster in the world.
You didn't say oldest podcaster. Thank you.
You're not the oldest, I guarantee you.
It is the longest. Yeah, 6 years old. 6 years.
IT Conversations.
Yeah. 6 years last week.
He's also at conversationsnetwork.org and has really been one of the people who's really forwarded this medium. You were way ahead of the... You knew.
Well, if you don't count yourself and about a half a dozen other people.
You beat me.
Yeah, but you're discounting 20 years of radio.
Yeah, I don't know. Does radio count when you're talking new media?
It's all the same. You're sitting around talking into a microphone, right?
I guess. It is kind of actually
but thank you.
All the same.
No, it's been,
well, it's great
been
to have
fun
you back.
6 years. Thank
you haven't been on in ages.
I haven't. Somebody said to me today, he said, weren't you just on TWiT? And I said, no, it's been months. 9 months.
Nine months.
I've been coding. I've been busy.
You still code?
Yes.
That's
well,
neat.
No, I code again. I went.
You're
for,
back to.
Well, I went for 15 or 20 years with no coding as an executive.
What are you writing?
I was an executive. What am I writing? PHP. Yeah. I'm doing a new site.
Oh, cool.
But anyway, yeah,
I'll
very
ask
busy
you about
with
it
that.
Later. Yeah. Also here, Mr. Will Harris from the UK. He's in studio, which is very nice.
Watcha, fellas.
Out with his watcha. Wait a minute. Doug said that he's been saying hello,
hello,
and you now started. You're starting a new trend. Is that it?
Yeah, it's gonna be a watcher, fellas, from now on.
Watcher, fellas.
I've got my wife is now saying hello, and she doesn't know where it came from. She walks around saying the same thing.
Hello,
hello, hello.
What can I say? I'm the king of slightly camp catchphrases.
My new catchphrase: screw you. That's good. It's been very useful.
Did I hear a mashup on that?
Yeah, there have been a bunch of mashups.
Oh, I heard one.
Oh, endless series of mashups. This is the.
Oh, I want a T-shirt.
Leo says.
You know, what'd be funny is to
Leo
do.
Says,
Leo
screw
told
you.
Me, screw you. It'd be like a yeah. You know a special small club. So a couple of stories. Actually, John, you had something you wanted to talk about. What was that? I forgot now.
I did too.
Okay, so we'll start.
The pre.
You want to talk about the pre? It's been out for a week.
So I got my hands on one finally.
Was yours free?
It wasn't mine. It was somebody else's. I borrowed it.
Oh, good.
I didn't even get one free or pay for one or get one loaned to me or anything.
Did you have a time that you had to give it back? Was it ascertained?
To the guy. I had to give it back to the guy. I don't like it.
No, that's the solution. Go through a middleman, Leo. If you have a middleman, then you're never responsible. They can't get to you.
I just get John to get everything for me. So you don't like it?
No, I think the keyboard's unusable. I think the device has got, you know, what's the difference between that and an Android? I like the fit and finish. I think it's kind of cool. It's got a nice little rubbery background, and the screen feels really nice when you move things around on it. But I'm not seeing that it's anything out of the ordinary. It's a little late to the game. I think it's late to the party. I know that Sprint set new records for sales and all these kinds of things happen, but I'm not seeing this thing saving the company, to be honest about it.
Well, there is a challenge.
Really, I mean, great apps.
It's going to be tough. Verizon has now apparently. Well, Verizon's president said we're going to carry it. They're saying now the scuttlebutt is January 1st. Does that change your attitude if Verizon sells this as well as Sprint?
No, I don't care about the carrier, to be honest. But I'm just talking about the phone per se.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of people I think there's a lot of people that would say the best thing about the pre is that it's a usable smartphone that's not on AT&T. Because the number one complaint I hear about the iPhone repeatedly over here, anyway, is that AT&T is just not the carrier that people want to use. And so even if it's only half as good as the iPhone, it's twice as good as most other smartphones out there. And so to get it on Verizon and Sprint is an automatic win for a lot of people that don't want AT&T.
I talk to, when anybody says I want to stay on Sprint, I say, oh, you got to get the pre. I mean, that is it's number two. I'm going to say it's the second best smartphone.
I mean,
smartphone
to me, it's all about the apps. That's the big difference.
And there are very few apps. You know. Although more apps on this than when the iPhone shipped. I mean, the first iPhone.
Well, there were no apps than when the first
iPhone. That's not saying anything.
But, the apps are something that actually make a phone something that becomes more valuable over time. And there aren't that many phones you can say become more valuable over time.
I like the I like the form factor, John. I feel like it's like a little pebble that was supposed to be a river rock. And I think they've kind of done that. It multitasks, which the iPhone doesn't do. It's got a very good camera, which the iPhone didn't have until Monday. Now, of course, the iPhone's leapfrogged it. They not only have a camera of equal quality, the new 3GS, you look at the picture, you tap the person you want it to focus on, and it focuses it. That's something even a digital camera can't do. And it's going to have video that you can edit in phones.
Well, that's a very nice segue to the news of the week.
Well, that's the news of the week, but also the news of the week, which is what you were saying, which is that people hate AT&T. People are not blaming Apple for the price, but they are blaming AT&T because a lot of people bought an iPhone exactly 1 year ago, and they're going to be paying $4.99 and $5.99.
Yeah, and it's the same in the UK as well.
Is it?
The official carrier in the UK has come under such a lot of heat, especially for gouging on the data tethering charges.
But to be fair, that would be true of any carrier. Anybody, what carrier is going to let you have a 2-year plan and walk in after 1 year and get a new phone at a discount? They don't do that.
Should?
Yeah, that's just the standard way that AT&T handles its smartphone upgrades. It's really not that unusual.
Is it just AT&T, though?
Everybody does that.
Right, everybody does it that way.
I guarantee you, if a year from now you want to buy a new pre, you'll be paying $400 or $500.
I don't understand why these carriers, given that they've got people wanting to give them money, surely the sensible thing to do would be to make sure, okay, you can have a subsidized upgrade, but you've always got to keep a 2-year contract. Either prorate it or keep it pushed out to 2 years. So you can upgrade in 6 months, but then you've got to add another 6 months to your contract. Or you can upgrade in 18 months, you've got to add another 18 months.
But you'd have to look at the economics. I'm not trying to defend the carriers, but you have to look at it and recognize that they counted on a certain amount of revenue for all those sales. The phones are underwritten, and the question is, you know, can they really do that within the economics of the plan? I don't know.
What were you about to say?
Well, it's funny that whenever the iPhone comes up, and for example, there was some of this during the introduction of the first iPhone, that what people end up talking about is how crappy AT&T is.
Yes.
You remember David Pogue's video For the first iPhone, where he's explaining the iPhone to his colleagues at the New York Times. There's a big crowd around him, and he mentions, and it's only on AT&T, and everybody goes, oh. And I think that one of the problems with this, with the iPhone is that it every time it's mentioned, it shows off or emphasizes the weaknesses of AT&T. I think in some ways, the iPhone is bad for AT&T's reputation.
Well, but what was it? 30% of iPhone owners are new AT&T customers. Yeah. I mean, it certainly has not been bad for business.
Bad for their reputation. What reputation?
is there somebody we love? I mean, come on. Aren't all cell phone carriers sleazy?
Well, here's something interesting. I went to Missouri, and that requires traveling through the wilds of North Texas and Oklahoma. And AT&T has no 3G there, and sometimes there's not even the edge network in some of those locations. And I took with me the Verizon MiFi and used that to talk to Verizon's network with my iPhone, and it was dramatically better.
Oh, so dear.
It was kind of that like, here's what the iPhone would be like on Verizon. And it was much, much better. And I think that if when the iPhone's exclusivity with AT&T ends and Verizon is able to strike a deal with Apple, I think the stampede's going to begin.
2010 it ends.
That's unless they get an extension.
It'll be interesting. You know, is it in Apple's interest? Isn't it in Apple's interest to dump? Or not dump, but at least to
open
diversify?
It up.
Yeah.
Open it up.
Well, again, it comes back to this question of Doug's about the economics. If it makes more economic sense for AT&T to keep paying Apple to have it.
Well, it probably does.
Yeah. Then
but
Apple's
how much?
Probably,
yeah. But see, you know, for instance, you know, here's Phil Schiller talking about... we're going to have tethering on the new 3GS and we're going to have MMS on the new 3GS. And he shows all the carriers are going to support MMS. No AT&T. He shows all the characters are going to show tethering. Right. Rogers, T-Mobile, Orange. No AT&T.
This is with the 3GS, you're saying?
Yeah.
Right, which implies
AT&T says, well, hey, we'll have it later this summer.
Well, that implies that they'll eventually get it, right, in 2010.
Someday.
Yeah.
Someday. Someday my MMS will come.
I mean, thank goodness there's some competitive pressure. Unfortunately, those of us with iPhones are going to just suffer for another year.
Well, so here's the question. I mean, how many people are going to buy, are going to bite the bullet? I already did. So I'll tell you the truth.
As usual,
and buy the new 3GS,
I'm not out of contract. My second year. I've got a 3G.
Me too.
I'll wait a year.
You're going to wait a year?
Yeah. Yeah, there's not enough.
I'll wait a year also.
There's not enough for me to go. I mean, I like it. If I didn't cost me anything,
you know what the big announcement really was the $99 3G, the 8K 3G.
That's remarkable.
That is going to be very good for AT&T and very good for Apple. But
unless you just bought one of the 8 gigs for $199.
Yeah, then, which I did, of course.
Yes.
And for my son. And, you know, now I'm screwed.
Well, see, what I did, I bought a 3G. I ordered a 3GS for my son. So that's my way of getting
it. Well, you did get one then.
Yeah, but I get to play with it, and I get to, you know, all that.
You know what? There's some features I like. I love the idea that you can leave the phone in a restaurant, and then the GPS says, oh, look, this is where you left it. And then you call the restaurant, and you said, hello, I left my phone there. Do you hear a screaming sound coming from the cushion in the booth in the back? That's my phone. Go get it. You press a button, and this phone goes...
All right, something. So that begs a question, though. Do you leave location services turned on all the time?
Well, I don't know.
Do you need them?
We'll see. Friday, I'll get this, and we'll let you know what you need.
Yeah, you need it.
Yeah.
Do you leave
dead
your
dead as a doornail in 10 minutes?
It sucks battery.
Dead as a doornail in 10 minutes.
Yeah, it sucks battery. You know, it just pulls it right down.
Yeah, and they say twice.
Also, you have to have mobile me in order.
You need right. mobile me to make that work, right?
Oh, of course, because I'm a complete fool. I have a mobile me.
Well, I also have a mobile me.
Oh, you do? I'm a fool. I thought you were kidding. You do need mobile me for that?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
They got to give you some reason to buy that
Well,
thing.
That's the reason to buy it, right?
There's a few other things.
And you can do the, you can automatically lock it if it gets stolen. And you can put a little message on it saying, you know, if I've lost this phone, please call, you know, your home number. So there are a few little Brucey bonuses in there that, you know, make mobile me kind of...
I use back to my Mac. I like
mobile
that.
Me's still according, not
wait, back to my Mac works?
It's according to one of the mavens on the Twit IRC, he says it doesn't scream, it just beeps.
Yeah,
he's tried it.
It's a loud, annoying beep. Beep, 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 beep. Well, he's tried it on the old
phone.
Just
like Ellen Feist. Beep, 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 beep. Her voice.
Boy, that is a memory, I'll tell you.
Do you know, I was looking that up only the other day.
That was the girl who did the Apple ad that she was clearly high. And they never aired the ad, but it was online everywhere, right?
Mm,
yeah. Yeah. She was clearly high, and she said, you know, like, well, I was using a PC and it lost my paper. It's very funny.
It was like,
it's a classic.
Name's gone.
Yeah. I'll play it at the end of the show. You can be the judge. You be the judge. When we come back, Will Harris is going to say, so what are you going to say?
Ahmadinejad.
Ahmadinejad and?
Ahmadinejacket.
And Ahmadinejacket and Mousavi.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Iran and the colossal CNN fail of the week. But before we do that, I want to mention our friends at GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting from Citrix is the online meeting service that's just so easy to use and saves you money. How can a product that costs $50 a month save you money? Well, how much do you spend on business travel? You know, a ticket across the country, $300, not to mention the stress, the time wasted. Even driving across town today as gas prices go up again is expensive. That's why GoToMeeting is a money saver, a time saver, a stress saver. Hold your meetings online. By the way, these meetings are more engaging, more fun. People appreciate it. It's not like, you know, people are going to say, oh, you didn't come to visit us. Frankly, they don't want you to come visit. And they got to buy you dinner. Come on, let's admit it, right? They got to entertain you. That's no fun. Stay home and have a GoToMeeting for sales presentations, for product demos, for training. I use it to collaborate. We use it on the Maxwell's House podcast because he could show his screens, beautiful, high-quality screens. Just about any kind of conference call is easier and better with GoToMeeting. By the way, it includes free voice over the internet and free telephone teleconferencing. It's the most secure way, the easiest way, and I want you to try it right now. GoToMeeting.com/twit. GoToMeeting.com/twit. These guys are fantastic. They've been real supporters of the Twit Network. So if you support the Twit Network also, give it a try. GoToMeeting.com/twit. I think you'll find a lot of ways to use it. I'm a dinner jacket. What is it?
I'm a dinner jacket.
I'm a dinner jacket.
So this is the CNN fail of the week, right?
Of the week. I think you could say this might be a turning point. No, look at here. I'm Saturday afternoon. I went home after the radio show. You're seeing on Twitter, literally live, people are saying, I'm being tear gassed right now. I'm running. You even can see Mousavi's tweeting saying they've got me under house arrest. I'm going, oh, my God, this is huge. The election is being stolen in Iran. Quick turn on CNN. It's a Larry King rerun with American Chopper. there's guys without sleeves talking about motorcycles. Like, oh, well, geez, maybe MSNBC. They're talking about prisoners. They're doing their like documentary. They're sleazo documentaries about people in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Fox. No, they got a rerun on too. Nobody, none of the news stations were covering this story all day Saturday. But if you go to Twitter, now, admittedly, you're not getting news on Twitter, but you're getting, the stuff as it happens. It turns out that in Tehran, of course, for those who don't know, Ahmadinejad decided that he won the election, regardless of what the actual vote is. I'm going to raise some issues about that, but we don't know. The most supporters of Mousavi, who really, the Green Revolution, they were really progressive Iranians, at least in the cities, and I think that's the issue here, were burning cars, they were protesting. They were being shut down. The Iranian authorities immediately turned off text messaging. They blocked Twitter on the internet. They did everything they could to keep it from getting out, but people still had Twitter applications on their phones, and tweets were still getting out. And if you were reading these tweets, you were watching a revolution in the streets live in real time. And meanwhile, CNN, well, if you want to build a motorcycle.
I did see one news crew, I think it might have been NBC, who was in Tehran, who was videotaping, had their videotapes taken away by the police, and they covered it with their mobile phones.
Isn't that amazing?
So they actually covered it, and they sent footage back, and you see the burning.
And to CNN's credit, to this morning on GPS, they did very good coverage. Christiane Amanpour was there. She's Iranian. There are people there. The New York Times, though, did a brilliant – it's ironic. The newspapers did a brilliant job on their websites. And so my point is that – I think this might be a turning point. If you want to see breaking news, you go to the web now. You do not turn on the news station.
And it's not just that. I mean, first of all, there's another irony, which of course is that when the people did start to catch up, what did they do? They read Twitter on the air.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that was
that
news,
was their
right?
source.
But it's not just a matter of a change in media. It's a matter of change in source. You actually are getting, you're getting this information not from reporters, but from the first person, from the people who are Iranians who are there. That's almost as big, maybe that's a bigger story or a bigger issue than the fact that the media didn't cover it, right? The fact that this is citizen journalism.
Yeah.
Or it does raise an issue,
and this is the second issue I wanted to raise, is that you're getting the point of view from the cities, from the people in Tehran. And it may be, in fact, Ahmadinejad did win the election because he won in the countryside where people don't have Twitter, you know.
Well, we will never know who actually won the election.
Right.
I mean,
I'm just pointing out that the Twitterati in Iran may be a very small group compared to the overall
electorate.
It was
interesting
you get first person news, but you get it, you know, kind of.
Yeah, but you get, you know, you
without
get,
analysis.
Yeah, but you get a large number of people supplying this information.
That's true. And right? if you looked at the hashtag Iran election, in fact, today, if you look at it, there's still stuff going on. A half a minute ago, the riot police are now shooting at protesters. I mean, this is still going on.
Well, when you say you get news but not analysis, Leo, news is not analysis ever.
Okay.
This reportage is actually accounts for news of some sorts, eyewitness accounts, which I think is quite valuable. By the way, Christine Amanpour is Lebanese, I think.
They said on CNN that she was born in Iran. But anyway, okay. She's certainly on the ground there and doing a great job, as was, by the way, a New York Times reporter who was, I mean, there's a dramatic video on the web of him up on the roof saying we had to get off the streets. You know, here's what's going on. And that was yesterday. They were doing video on the web, mm-hmm. New York Times, yesterday. They were doing great coverage.
And Leo, it's kind of ironic that any kind of an explanation as to why CNN and Fox and MSNBC did not cut away and try to provide live coverage? Have any of them kind of addressed the anger and the questions that people have?
Well, I saw one crew who was saying that anytime there were more than two people together, they were being beaten by police. Yeah. I mean,
They
were not able to cover it. And I think that comes back. I want to just go back to this one more time. I won't beat this to death. But the fact is that we often talk about comparing people who are tweeting to CNN. And I think the comparison isn't valid. I wouldn't even make the comparison. We're just going to have to get used to the fact that whatever we want to call it, news or journalism or something else, we are going to get a lot more information from things like Twitter in the future. And I'm not sure that we need to spend a lot of time trying to figure out what it is. We need to embrace it because it's going to be there. And it's a very, you know, in this case, it's an important source.
This is from Silence No More. This came out a minute ago. We want to keep tweeting. This is the only place the real news is getting out. I mean, this is a very, I think, remarkable. The source, the information direct from Iran that we're getting.
Somebody in the chat room, I didn't see the whole thing, but mentioned the Daily Show. Did you see a thing last week where they went and talked to the New York Times?
No.
Did you see it? Oh, God, it's great. In the interview, interviewed a guy at the Times, and he says, so tell me, you know, this is a daily newspaper. What in your newspaper happened today? Is there anything in your
Nothing.
Paper that happened today? No, it's all
yesterday's.
Right. And that's a fundamental issue right there, isn't it?
But there's the word daily newspaper means it comes out every day. It's like 1 hour cleaners. A guy goes, he says, it's 1 hour cleaners. No, that's just the name of the place.
24-hour fitness. Right. We're not open at night, but if you needed it.
But the fact is that you're talking about somebody who is, you know, if you want to sit back and not see the world in real time, but you want to see the world as it was a day ago. That's a valid source.
Well, I think in a way, Newsweek did this about...
I read the Times every day. Don't get me
too.
Wrong, right?
Newsweek about a month ago said, we give up. We can't cover it. We're a weekly. We can't possibly cover news as fast as it's happening. So we're going to become an analysis magazine. I don't know if you've looked at Newsweek lately, but it is not the same magazine. I think that maybe that's what CNN's doing. Maybe they don't have the budget to do anything but reruns on the weekends. Certainly MSNBC, that's what they were doing.
But I think the problem is that it purports to be real time.
Well, we know now it's not.
Because, you know, the whole point of a 24-hour news channel is CNN breaking news, is 24-hour news.
As John says, it's just the name.
Yeah, so it seems really strange that, you know, something that's set up you know, we're always talking about how we live in this 24-hour news culture, but it seems that even that is now not enough. Like, we need, like, a second-to-second news culture.
Well, there's, you know, stuff happens real time, and the internet has connected us in a way real time. You know, when Iran... When you had to send a telegraph dispatch from Iran, you know, you're not going to have real-time news, but we can now, thanks to the internet, really be real-time. And I think that's very powerful. We're tied together.
There were some people who said that what CNN should have done was gone on the air, and even if they couldn't report, if they couldn't get any video, was to begin working with the social media and reporting what was being said there and try to provide some context. And they might even have been able to do real-time verification of some of the things that were being said, because they do have reporters there. And so it just struck me and others who were watching it as very odd, is that they did not cut away. This was the network that cut its teeth on cutting away. And on Saturday night, you know, everybody was taking the night off. And I think that struck a lot. You know, what happens is people see this initially on Twitter, on social networks, and then they go to television to get it, you know, live as it's happening.
And put together and get pictures.
Right.
And
do that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that failed them. And
that's exactly right.
Just Twitter, that process failed them.
Twitter was the early warning system, and we expected then the follow-up on news.
Right. So what happens when Iranians in the streets of Tehran can initiate live streaming video from their 3G
Which is
phone.
Imminent.
Right. Then you'll say, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not going to go. You know, think of the things that you've done, the live video events. Think of Scoble standing at the iPhone, the first iPhone thing in New York or where Palo Alto was. I mean, at some point, the event is the coverage through a streaming mobile device. And you don't go anywhere else because you're not going to get closer to the action.
I think that's really interesting, because the word that you had there was like coverage. And it's true, because, you know, you can have lots of Iranians on the streets of Tehran with streaming mobile phones, and you can see what's happening, but nobody can really kind of tell you what that means or put it together.
Yeah, but you're getting the raw material.
You're getting the raw material, sure.
Right. And then you've got somebody like Leo, who will sit here and he will watch a half a dozen video streams from a half a dozen people in Tehran, and he'll switch back and forth. And he'll be the anchor / technical director.
Well, I do notice that nobody's...
Leo, get on it.
Well, I do notice nobody's doing a live tech coverage, and I do think that that's an opening for me in a very poor man's way to do coverage of that kind of thing. I don't know if I'll ever be covering revolutions in Iran.
Is that timely, though?
Well, some of it's not. Some of it is. So we have this kind of programming, which is, you know, we're covering this week's news. We're not covering today's news. Well, we are a little bit, but
it's not this minute in tech.
Yeah. But on the other hand, if big DDoS attack happened all of a sudden on Yahoo, or if Microsoft announced that it was getting out of business, we'd cover it live, and we'd have the capability to do it.
You and I have talked about this before, a live anchored control room. And I can see that.
I think that's where we're headed.
What's headed, and it's going to be a mobile devices, and you'll cut away to somebody.
We'll be able to pull from all these sources.
Exactly.
And then in 10 years time, there'll be somebody else sitting in a room going, that Leo Laporte, I can't believe he didn't cut away to that story.
10 years,
it's absolutely
10
ridiculous.
Minutes. 10 minutes. But that's the beauty of it, is now anybody can do it. It's not expensive. And if that coverage is out there now, now here's the issue. How do stringers make any money anymore? Do they make any money? Who's going to pay them? I'm not going to pay them.
No, but again, you're comparing it to an old system.
So the whole system falls.
Well, you're trying to shoehorn it into the old system.
No, you're right.
Those
the
terms.
Whole system falls. Yeah.
I mean, I was.
So can I ask a question amongst this during this little debate here?
Yes.
What's the rush? What's the rush? Why do we need to know what's happening in Tehran this very second?
No, that's a very good question.
It's not that.
It's going to have no effect on our lives at the moment. We could sit back and wait for it to be analyzed, and we'd probably get more out of it. What is the rush?
I understand that, John, but the fact is, I think there's a human nature aspect. Why do we watch car chases on television in Los Angeles?
I don't.
I know. But I will fess up to the fact that I have done that. I have been in Los Angeles where that seems to be. They ought to have a car chase channel down there, don't you think? Anyway, I've watched car chases. I have watched.
They really should, because it's pretty much 24/7.
Yeah. And the fact is, there's a sense of immediacy. There's the fact that I want to know when something happens. And I think that's inevitable.
I think there's some compelling reasons to do this in real time.
You know, this is a scoop mentality that always leads to bad information.
It's dangerous. And that was kind of the point I was making.
Well, this is beyond the scoop. This isn't the scoop. This is the raw material.
This is as it happens.
It's a scoop. I still see it as a scoop. It's only one person's perspective from one spot. He's delivering maybe a picture or something like that. It's a scoop.
Surely it's the anti-scoop. Because at that point, because a scoop is one person has some exclusive information.
That's right.
Twitter is everybody can see what everybody is seeing.
You have disintermediated the scooper.
That's got to be the title for today's show. Disintermediating
right now. Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Disintermediation is what it's all about.
I think, John, you're also doing the same thing I did, which is kind of interpreting it through the lens of old media. And I think just as a possibility for how it might end up playing out is the thing happens, the fire. You see the pictures live. There's a swarm of attention around it. There are people putting the story out. People watch it. Think about it. A conversation starts around it. That's what we're seeing on places like FriendFeed, where people start analyzing it themselves. And consensus is reached through these conversations that happen over a period of a day or two or three that actually, in the end, I think produces a better understanding of the story than waiting a day and reading what the New York Times has to say about it.
I spoke at a conference last week, the Beyond Broadcast Conference. Mm-hmm. And this is primarily people in public media, public radio, public television, as well as academic journalism. And I came away with it from the same sense that I get all the time at these events, which is there's still such a sense of preserving, try to understand new media in the sense of how do we adapt what we have to new media instead of going directly to the new media.
Right.
How do we keep the jobs is, of course, one way to look at it. But
that's always
so
the case. Look at the record industry. If you've built a business around a business, I'm starting to understand this now having a business. When you build a business around a business model, it's deucedly hard to change the business model underneath the business.
Dilemma.
Yeah.
Right.
You've the whole thing is set up around, we print these broadsheets that have a display ad on it and some ad copy, and we deliver them via truck to a newsstand where somebody picks it up for 20 cents. That, if that's your business model, it's very hard to say, well, what happens when we get rid of the truck, the newsstand, the broadsheet, the display ad? Now what's our business?
Right. Well, they'll focus on, well, maybe we should do it by, getting more gas efficient trucks.
Right.
It's
very hard. And I think Microsoft's got the same problem. It's just the innovator's dilemma.
It is true. But I think a big part of the innovator's dilemma is that the alternative, the so-called sort of new way of doing things, doesn't generate the same amount of money that the old way of generating
not
things
at first
did. Well, not ever. I mean, if
not
you look at
first,
what a page...
Not in, ever.
If that's it, that's it. So
be
it.
Look at what the New York Times charges, per page,
they
then
can't
look at
do
what it.
It
can charge online. You physically can't do it. You either accept the fact that it's a smaller business. I mean, I saw a great statistic out of from Rupert Murdoch, of all people, last week, saying that the amount of web advertising inventory online doubles every year and has doubled for the past 3 years. And that means that every year it gets doubly as hard to keep an audience and build an audience, your advertising rates halve, and you've got double the number of competitors. And that's just not true on the newsstand. And so it's not a case of adapting old business models. I mean, as you say,
it's fragmented,
it really
is what's happening.
There is no business model for generating something like the New York Times online. There is no
if the Times goes away,
that can sustain.
Is there a fixed amount of advertising money that's now available and floating around?
Yes.
No, it's a decreasing amount of advertising money.
Okay, that's the issue.
The problem is that there are, there is X billion dollars in the advertising market. And in the print world, everybody gets, 10% of X billion dollars.
Right.
Whereas in the online world, everybody gets
a thousandth.
Like, a thousandth, right. And the rates are dropping, and there's another 1,000 people
so
to
what
compete
happens?
With every year. Well, everybody gets screwed.
All right, so here's
you're all screwed.
No, it's not everybody gets. No, not everybody.
So what's one of the reasons that people think that newspapers have gotten into trouble? Who's the guilty party? Craigslist.
The guilty
right?
party are Craigslist. The people. The guilty party are the people who are trying to take this old model and shoehorn it into the internet. That's the guilty part.
But who's being blamed? I think Craigslist is getting a fair share of the blame.
Yes.
So
depends on who's talking. I think a lot of the higher ups in the newspaper industry are using that as a scapegoat. I think those of us who are actually like doing it on websites, mm-hmm. In print, we kind of understand what I think is really happening. And what I think has to happen, and some of us are doing it, we're trying to do that at cron.com, is to change fundamentally what journalists do. The classic journalism activity was for a reporter himself or herself to go out, get the story, make sense of it, and distill it. Now what I think journalists have to do is we have to be curators of what the community is saying about itself so we can help people make sense of the community covering itself. Mm-hmm. So the comment that was made about somebody like Leo piecing together all the best video and kind of making sense of all the individual streams that are coming out of an event like Tehran, that's where the future of what are called newspapers now will
aggregation.
Be. And it'll be aggregation and curation, and it will be done in cities nationally and globally. And the person or the people who kind of find that model first and hone it and make it palatable are going to be the people who win. And we're trying to do it.
Dwight, what, just as another irony, can you imagine what would happen if Craigslist, who's, what do we hear, 100 million in revenues or profits or something, right? Suppose Craigslist decided to fund some journalistic activities. Wouldn't there be a fascinating irony there?
It'd be a fine irony. Bring it.
I would love to see it too.
Yeah, well, certainly aggregators are going to be some of the winners. And if you're a big enough aggregator, you'll get a big enough chunk of that old advertising dollar, so you might be able to survive. And then one hopes that some of that income will trickle down to the stringers and reporters.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
The fact is there are going to be fewer dollars in the business.
That's probably
the
true.
Business will shrink.
Huffington Post, just what did they put aside? $1 million for investigative journalism?
I mean, that's not that much.
Yeah, compared to what kind of that's budget is a typical newspaper budget? Is it a lot more?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
so
it's
do we lose investigative? Do we lose investigative journalism?
Times. The New York Times has got over 1,000 people working in its newsroom. To produce the daily, to
meanwhile,
produce the news.
Over on MSNBC, we're learning the rates for call girls in New York State. So,
hey,
I'm glad
that's
that they're
investigative journalism.
They're covering the big
down.
Story. You see, this is the problem: is that these guys, not the Chronicle, obviously, but some of these guys are just shooting themselves in the foot. They're just they don't get it.
One of the things we should always mention when we're talking about newspapers and the problems that they're having is the fact of the matter is they are a redundant product. And they can maybe blame the Associated Press for part of this and also the New York Times Syndicate, I'm guessing, and perhaps the Washington Post. But, you know, if you pick up any newspaper around the country, it essentially has the exact same news in it as another paper nearby. And when they all go online, it becomes, you know, patently right. obvious
it's
that
exactly
these guys are
the same. It's four different rewrites of AP copy.
Yeah, and you'll see these stories. And if you go to go to Google News where they show you the number of stories that are similar.
Identical.
And they break like the Iranian story. There'll be like 5,000 stories and they're all the same. Yeah.
There's one site that, Dwight, you may know these guys, voiceofsandiego.org. Do you know them?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is an interesting sort of transitional group. Voiceofsandiego.org is a nonprofit investigative journalism organization. I think they got started with a particular story uncovering some local scandal. And it's become so popular, they've received a lot of nonprofit institutional funding and so forth. But this is a very lean, mean, low-budget investigative journalism site, which I think has a lot going for it. I met some of the people.
Your daughter's getting into journalism. She's going to college for journalism. Dwight, are you discouraging her?
She knows the reality of it. I mean, she lives in my house, so
she's seen it firsthand.
She's seen it firsthand. You know, we had 90 layoffs here in the Chronicle newsroom earlier in the year. And it's, I did not know if I was going to be on that list. I hope not, and I was not, thankfully. But she understands it. She's, like I said, she's taking the convergence track and, you know, is going to be studying video, audio, is going to be learning to write, is going to be learning to work on the web and report for the web. She's already got a very active Twitter account and communicates with other journalists and talks about stories with other professional journalists online. So she's doing the right things. It'll be interesting to see what kind of a job she can get when she gets out of there. Because that'll be, you know, at least 4 or 5 years from now. So she's aware of the reality. She also has one eye on law school.
You know, I was just thinking, if I were starting out, especially in California, I would buy a lot of arable land suitable for growing marijuana and maybe get into the bong business, because I think marijuana is going
to
be legalized in about a year. Yeah, and I think that's going to be really a great business to be in the next year in California. Just a
farming.
Thought. Just a thought. Just, you know, we're going to take a break. When we come back, there are other big stories. The digital transition happened on Friday. 300,000 calls to the FCC. Most of them sounded something like this. What happened? My TV's not working. We'll also talk about the Facebook land grab. But before we do that, I want to talk about audible.com, the place to go for audio entertainment, the greatest books. It's like your digital library. Online, 60,000 plus titles, some wonderful literature. Audible, and I've got a deal for you. This is the platinum deal. I have a platinum account. That's two books a month. Well worth it. I go through two books a month easily. And I, you know, in a way, I'm building a library. The neat thing about Audible is those books are yours forever. You can go back to Audible, download them again, put them on a different device. Plays on everything. iPod, Zune, most of the MP3 players, iPhone, of course, even the Kindle and some GPS devices. And with two books a month, you know, you're building a library. Audible.com/twit2. That's the place to go to sign up for that gold account. And your first two books are free. Two books free. Well, you said, were you listening to some Audible?
I was.
On the way over here?
I just finished listening to a fantastic book called Making Money by Terry Pratchett. It's the latest Terry Pratchett book.
I love Terry Pratchett.
It's a real return to form. There has been a segment in the last couple of years where some of the books have been a little slightly ropey. The last couple of books have been really good. A new cast of characters. You can get the abridged version on Audible, narrated by Tony Robinson of Blackadder.
Is this the counterfeit?
Fame? The counterfeit money.
Yeah, right.
You've read it, Doug?
No, I've heard about the book. I heard it's excellent.
Terry, of course, has Alzheimer's, and he's writing very slowly right now. But this is a new book from him.
And it's a new book, and I would argue it's definitely one of his best.
Oh, isn't that great?
So, narrated by Tony Robinson.
He was only able to write sometimes a sentence a day.
Yeah. Mm.
So this is a book that a lot of heart and soul put into. Wow. So which do you recommend, abridged or unabridged?
Well, the unabridged is read by Stephen Briggs, who, no offense, Stephen Briggs, is a bit of a no-name. Opposed to Tony Robinson, who's a very famous name in...
You get two, so get them both.
So get them both.
Oh. They're both free.
Listen, that's what you want to do, is listen to an audiobook twice.
Once abridged, once unabridged. I think that's nothing wrong with that. I'm just thrilled that, you know, much of the Discworld series is on Audible. In fact, I recommended...
A lot of it is on Audible. A lot of it's read by Nigel Planer, who's
he does a great job.
Fantastic. And, of course, of The Young Ones, another great...
Oh, see,
British
I didn't
comedy.
Know. I don't know the... But he's
a
wonderful reader.
British actor in Britain.
So there you go. Terry Pratchett's Making Money. I'm looking for the abridged version. I see the unabridged here by Stephen Briggs. I wonder if in America, you know what, we may not have. It may be a UK only.
Maybe a UK...
Goodness. Oh dear.
Oh no. It says, I'm looking on the site and it says it's in dollars. So it's definitely on there.
Oh dear. I know, I'm looking for it. Okay. Well, I'll find it. Making Money. We'll put a link in the show notes. But you know, any of the Terry Pratchett books would be great. What's the first Discworld one? It was called
The Color of Magic.
Color of Magic.
Mm. No, The Light Fantastic.
No, I think it was anyway, both of them. Get them both.
Get both on there.
You get two. Audible.com/twit2, but now we've told you four books, and maybe you want to, you know, just get two next month as well. Audible.com. I love Audible, and I know you will too. It's the greatest. Listen to the books next time you're on the plane, in the car, on the train, stuck doing the laundry, working out in the gym. I listen to Audible all the time. Audible.com/twit2. We thank them so much for their support, and thank you, Will. For I had no idea that Making Money was on Audible.
Well, having just done an 11-hour plane trip, I can attest to the usefulness.
And you know how long the unabridged is? You should have got the unabridged. 11 hours, 8 minutes. Would it have taken you to the tarmac?
That would have just about done it,
Just
actually,
about done it.
Maybe for the way home. Listen to it again.
To it again. The full unabridged. Usually, I don't mind abridged in nonfiction, but I hate to listen to unabridged novels. I want to hear every word, especially if it took him like a day per sentence. You just like took a year of his life, you know, and threw it on the street and said, I don't need it. Audible.com. No, just teasing. /twit2 and Sir Terry Pratchett, we love you. Keep writing. We love those books. Have they made movies out of any of them? Rincewind
they've made TV movies. in England. I would the love TV to movies see it. Were not quite there.
I'd love to see somebody put their heart and soul like the Harry it Potter
should,
quality.
It should be a Lord of the
movie.
Rings Harry Potter style. Yeah. It really should be, and it amazes that me that wonderful. It isn't. I'm sure it's sat in a Hollywood backlot somewhere on somebody's desk, optioned and
sad. So, John, I'm going to give you your choice. You can talk about digital transition or Facebook. Which will it be?
I'm going to choose something. I'm going to take a third choice. I think is something we should discuss.
A new car. Oh, I'm sorry. No, what?
Come on down.
Wait a minute. Let me look under my chair.
Video game industry sets or hits 2-year low.
It's yeah. We just got off E3, the big video game convention.
My son's in that business.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is what's happening? Is it?
Is it because? Well, my daughter who's sitting here, she says it's because there's no. Which is what I thought too. There's no good games.
They suck.
Oh.
What's your son's game?
Transformers 2.
Oh, so he
comes out this month.
He's working for
Activision, I think.
Activision.
Like everybody, he freelances.
No, is he a design? What is he? What part
he's
of it
in
does
QA?
He, oh, cool. So he sits there and plays games all day.
That's what he. Yeah, that's what it sounds like. He wishes it were that easy.
He had the dream, the dream of every adolescent everywhere someday to get paid to play video games.
Well, after 3 years, I don't think it's quite that.
No, it loses some of its thrill, I'm sure. Yeah, like they say that it is a bad time right now for the video game industry. U.S. retailers in May hit the lowest mark in nearly 2 years. Overall sales dipped below $1 billion for the first time. Now, when you say below $1 billion, you can't exactly.
It's $1 billion per month.
Per month.
Yeah.
It's not exactly, tanking. It's not like CD-ROM sales or something.
I mean, you'd expect in this economy for everything to be down. One of the interesting things about the video game business that always fascinates me
it's
bigger than Hollywood.
Oh yeah. Well, maybe not now, but
no, it is. Still,
is it?
Yeah.
You wouldn't, that's the thing. You wouldn't expect movies to go down in a bad economy or video games. These are relatively inexpensive things you can do that, you don't have to leave the house. You don't have to go.
Movies wouldn't have gone down except we now have rental.
Yeah.
Right. In the 30s, movies did fine.
Right. Huge.
But there were no.
But they were only.
You couldn't
nickel.
Rent them. You couldn't watch them at home.
Right.
So I think another point. I mean, this is a good story in general. I think another point for the particular dip in May is the fact that May is a really slow time for video game sales.
June is notoriously. Oh, summer's bad.
I mean, summer is great for movies, and the flip side being that it's. Almost always bad.
I thought,
for
I thought
video
kids
games.
Getting out of school would help video games, but I guess they don't want
to
play them if they have homework.
Yeah.
I mean, the run up to Christmas, the holiday season is always the huge season. There's going to be a bonanza this holiday season.
Biggest decline, hardware sales, which fell 30% from last year. Games themselves, 23% down. While there were some very strong new releases this month, along with continued strong sales of evergreen games, the top 10 games sold only 2.6 million units compared to 3.7 million last year.
You've just got to look at, there's a great article on the Reg Hardware comparing them. The top game this year for May is UFC 2009, which by all accounts is a little bit lame. It's Wii Fit, Infamous, again a bit lame, Pokemon Platinum, come on. Whereas last May, the biggest selling game
Halo.
Was Grand Theft Auto
Grand Theft
4,
Auto.
Which had just gotten released.
Yeah.
So if you compare Grand Theft Auto 4
it's not fair.
Pokemon
it's just not
Platinum.
Fair, right?
It's not quite the same.
So, John, is your daughter saying the games suck these days?
That's what she said, yeah. Huh. And she should know.
Does she, spend a lot of time on the...
As far as I think, that's all she does.
All of your kids are big video gamers.
She just gave me a dirty look, by the way.
What grade is she in?
She's in the ninth grade.
Yeah.
Straight A's, by the way.
My son's in the ninth grade, plays a lot of video games, not straight A's, though.
All the big games we mentioned are all sequel games too, aren't they?
Well, that's one thing about video games. Sequels are usually better than, unlike movies where the sequels are usually worse. Games are usually
Grand
better.
Grand Theft Auto, Halo,
they get better.
Transformers
and better.
Even.
Look at the first Grand Theft Auto compared to the GTA 4. I mean, it's light night and day. Right. The first one was like top down,
2D. I remember 2D. Playing it. On like a Pentium 90 or something.
It was fun, but it wasn't anything like today's games.
No,
I think it's mostly economic. I mean, somebody mentioned that these games are inexpensive, and they're not. The people pay what $300, $400, $500 for the hardware, and then a game like Grand Theft Auto 4 is $60. The Sims 3 just came out, which is, you know, usually played by younger kids, a lot of times girls. I bet, John, your daughter's interested in it. You can get that for $50 or $70, depending on the version. That's not cheap. And in this economy, and the titles that you listed are all less expensive Wii titles.
That's true. Those are the best sellers, aren't they? Yeah.
Well, the Wii is the cheapest economic thing. Country Mile.
That might be. They're just too expensive. Should they cut prices and sell more?
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, they should, but the trouble is the cost of development of these games, as the systems get more and more complex, is getting higher and higher.
Let me tell you something.
My son needs a job.
Goes up, but,
let me tell you something.
Keep those prices up.
Grand Theft Auto 4 cost $150
million
to do.
I was at a, I won't say the name of the game or the company, but I was at a big scoring session for a video game. They rented Skywalker Sound, 70-piece orchestra, four-day recording session. This is the music for a video game. Mm-hmm. It sounded great, but that must have cost alone, you know, several million dollars.
For sure.
You've got musicians there all day.
This is one of the reasons why a lot of game developers are really interested in the iPhone as a game platform.
Casual gaming.
They can do things a lot cheaper. The development is a lot cheaper, and they can also recycle a lot of games.
And potentially you can reach a much larger audience. I mean, right. The amount of people with iPhones now, what are we into, like 10, 20 million? We must be up in that direction. Whereas the sales of most video game consoles are still not quite there yet.
Right. I mean, I go back to that Hollywood comparison. You know, an individual can still make a documentary, let's say, or even a small theatrical film. Mm. But an individual cannot make a game that's going to compete for the Xbox
can make an iPhone.
But you can't, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So this it's really the change of platform that enables the individual developers or the small groups of developers. Because the skill sets that you need to produce a competitive game are essentially the same skill sets now as a Hollywood feature film.
You look at the biggest selling, I believe the biggest selling video game company on the iPhone is this company NG Moco, who nobody had ever heard of before the iPhone came along.
I'm thinking I should learn iPhone development. That's
it's a really interesting
and
space.
And by the way, Palm Pre development, anybody who's lining up to develop for the Palm Pre, no. I mean, they may know it's easy as JavaScript, but I think the platform is the iPhone. I really do. What games does your daughter play, John? I don't think it's Sims 3 somehow.
She doesn't want to answer.
I think it's killing things.
No, she actually plays a lot of Wii games, and she plays on the DS a lot.
The DS is great. In fact, Henry and I are going to China.
And she's also she also comes into the living room here, and she turns off the HD feed on the big screen and plays on the Xbox 360 and leaves it on standard definition video, never changes it back. She just left. She stomped out.
Kids today, I tell you, they don't know. We used to be happy with SD.
So while your daughter is playing Nintendo and my son is playing Xbox 360, a 14-year-old student from New York State has become the youngest person in history to discover a supernova.
Oh, really? I missed that one.
Yeah.
Wow. That kind of puts it in perspective.
Yeah. Carolyn Moore, using a relatively small telescope, spied the faint object 70 million light years away from Earth. Yes. They dubbed it SN2008HA. It's actually a new kind of exploding star, 1,000 times more powerful than a regular nova, but 1,000 times weaker than a typical supernova. And I guess she'll be going to Harvard next year. I don't know. I mean, that's
snappy name.
That's good work.
Yeah.
It's better than playing games. Get on that telescope.
Get that telescope out. Look for a nova or something. Maybe you can get something named after you.
So now what were these other stories we were going to discuss?
Face squatting.
I like it. I like it.
Face squatting.
Oh, God.
Facebook announced earlier this week that to come midnight Eastern time on Friday, you would be able to apply. Because, you know, when you have a Facebook URL, it's, you know, facebook.com/?=137487111. You could apply to have whatever you wanted as be your name. So, for instance, I have facebook.com/Leo Laporte. Mm-hmm. And there was presumably a big land grab. They said in the first 15 minutes, 500,000 names were assigned.
The infrastructure handled it.
Kudos to Facebook. Good, yeah. I went there in the first 3 minutes. I got three domain names because I got Chief Twit for my personal page, Leo Laporte for my fan page, and Twit Live for my Twit page. And it flawless. Nothing, no delays, nothing. I was stunned.
I saw one of my favorites.
What's that?
Index.html.
and they got it?
No, actually, that one, I wanted to check on it, and it was available.
I think
now I've said it's gone, but index.html
that
was
would be
available.
Good because dots are ignored, so it really would be index.html.
Well, the point is the URL looks
it looks like a URL. Or you could put a little MySQL command in there. Tables, it'd be good.
Somebody looked like, missing page.jsp or something like that. It was great.
I think most people, however, opted for their own name. So here's the question. Is this kind of, from Facebook's point of view, I think they're looking over at Twitter saying, gosh, this could be the phone book for the internet generation. We got to get into this game.
Everybody's got a phone book.
Now there's phone books everywhere.
I mean, everybody who has a large base of customers has a namespace.
Well, no one has a larger base than Facebook.
I mean, AOL had this 10 years ago, right? Everybody.
Was there value at AOL that your, Leo Laporte at AOL.com was that?
I think it was tied to
screen name.
It was tied to the fact that in their case, it was critical because if you gave up your AOL address, you lost your email.
Somebody took facebook.com/default. Now that's a name.
But it's
is there value or is it so fragmented that there's not value? Is it possible that somebody like Facebook could become kind of the de facto? In other words, somebody said instead of saying at Leo Laporte, you'll say slash Leo Laporte.
Well, I think it's definitely possible that, I think for a lot of people, particularly, that younger generation, Facebook is their directory. Everyone has their phone number listed on Facebook. Nobody bothers using email. You just Facebook them.
You know what you do on the Palm Pre? You enter your Facebook ID in here, and it takes all the phone numbers from all your Facebook friends and populates your contact list.
I have an app for the iPhone that does the same thing to your address book. And that's exactly what you want, because that means, they can update their Facebook page. You can automatically have their latest numbers.
But don't...
I think it's certainly going, I can see in 6 months to a year, Facebook is your address book. And I mean, I think there's
value to that.
There's got to be some kind of Twitter, Facebook.
I was going to say, why?
I mean, there has to be.
Again, once you have a few million users, you have a certain amount of clout with that. I mean, how many people do you know on Facebook who aren't also on Twitter?
I know a lot of people on Facebook that aren't on Twitter.
Oh, right? Tons.
But that's because I think Facebook now has expanded into a much, much, much larger group of people.
Facebook is universal almost.
I mean, my mother is on Facebook. And, my mother would not dream of being on Twitter, but everybody she knows is on Facebook, all her old friends, and so that, she's got to be on Facebook as well. Lord help me.
Facebook is the new AOL.
Yeah.
And that's why. And Facebook is AOL.
Probably,
you look
probably
at
it's going to end up like AOL.
Yeah, I agree with John.
It's the new, right.
I think Facebook's days are numbered.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Facebook made money last quarter.
Because it's a walled garden?
I don't like their attitude.
I don't think. But, if you look at what Facebook is doing,
I just don't like them.
I don't like them. That's
not
why.
A universal address book, but there are Facebook Connect is the most genius thing I've heard in the last 12 months because they're allowing you to use that address book to plug in everywhere else.
Right.
I was giving a talk the other day, and I was saying, there is no reason if you're building a web app today to ever build your own sign-on system. You should, there is no reason because everybody can just sign on with Facebook.
Except, aren't you kind of a prisoner of Facebook then? I mean, doesn't that...
But what you lose in terms of the flexibility and, somebody else owning that user data, you gain in the fact that there's no barrier to entry for whatever your service is.
Well, it's true. For instance, I use Discuss on my blog comments, and Discuss automatically allows Facebook login, and I get many more comments because they don't have to create an account. They already have one. Although now they've added Twitter... And also people can sign in. Twitter's got OAuth. So now that OAuth is the engine behind this, is the the open source, authentication system. Twitter supports OAuth. Facebook supports OAuth. It's OpenID, basically. They've just become a
different.
It's different OpenID and OAuth.
OpenID
are
and
different.
OAuth are different, yeah.
Related?
Conceptually the same,
yeah.
But not related technically.
Okay. The nice thing about OAuth, Flickr used OAuth, is that you can... give somebody access to your account without giving them the keys to the kingdom. And that was the problem with Twitter. You used to have to give them your password. Now you can just say authorize.
I'm not sure. Somebody in the chat room will tell us. I'm not sure that Facebook is OAuth. OAuth is more for APIs.
Yeah. Facebook's using OpenID. They may not be OAuth.
OpenID. And I'm not, but is it really?
Yeah, that was the big deal that they support. They are now an open ID
provider. As a user, it doesn't look like it, but that
but no, that's kind of that Facebook Connect, I guess, could also be used as an open ID identifier.
I should try. We use open ID for our sites. I should try it.
Go ahead.
There's a story at Silicon Alley Insider. Nicholas Carlson has it that in which it's an interview with Zuckerberg, and he says that Facebook's future is not as a website. But rather it has a platform spread across the web. And if they do that and do that successfully, I think Facebook has a future. But, yeah, if they stay kind of as a walled garden that is as much irritating as it is useful, which is, I think, kind of the way a lot of people feel about it now, I don't think they have much of
a
future.
And here's the key.
Then I really don't like them.
Here's the key. You can't be a platform unless you're open, in my opinion. So
I think Microsoft would disagree,
but I agree with you. They disagree.
I think that's
why they're going to lose in the long run, because they are a closed platform. You know, look at Google Wave versus whatever, you know, SharePoint or whatever Microsoft's going to do in the collaboration field. Who are you going to adopt? You're going to adopt
Google
the open
Wave
one.
Being open is possibly game changing.
Huge.
Yeah.
So I would submit the same thing about Facebook. If they are, and this is the problem. I actually had this conversation with Facebook with Dave Morin. The problem is that the culture at Facebook, they even said this, our users don't want us to be open. They come there with an expectation of privacy. It's very difficult. Facebook, in effect, has to change its culture. You go to Facebook because no one can see what you're doing there. I asked my daughter at 9 o'clock on Friday, well, aren't you going to create Facebook.com/AbbyLaPorte? She said, no, the colleges will see me. She doesn't. The point of Facebook for her is privacy.
But I think there's a difference between being open with data and being open as a platform to allow people to do what they want with their data.
Right.
I think it is perfectly acceptable for Facebook to be very, very open about its platform, but use that openness to enable people to choose.
That was my point. I said, look, you've already got this everybody switch on your privacy controls. Shouldn't, if somebody says chosen, it's not the default, somebody's chosen, everybody can see my data, shouldn't you make it open? And Facebook did not. In fact, they said sites like FriendFeed can only cache it for 24 hours. They have to dump it. That isn't open. And they said the reason we didn't make it fully open is because our users expect privacy, even though I agree with you, Will. You could make that a switch. You could say you could have a public-facing Facebook, but they say we're not public-facing. Twitter's public-facing.
Well, why doesn't your daughter use that name of hers anyway and just keep a facade site? So the colleges do see her. They're going to see her as some prim and proper person who's very
dedicated
to academics.
So Abby LaPorte just has lots of photos of really, really, really proper things as opposed to lots of teenage things.
Well, don't you think I, as a dad, wondered, well, what the hell is on your page that you don't want anybody to see?
Yeah, really? No kidding.
What is it? The drunken photos not for public consumption, Abby? What exactly is on there?
How many Facebook users are there compared to Gmail users?
Gmail's pretty small. Is Facebook, much bigger. Gmail is surprisingly small. Yahoo and Hotmail, much bigger than Gmail.
Much bigger. But Gmail has such a mind share among the technorati.
The digerati.
So is there anybody who's close? I mean, it's a numbers game. Is there anybody who's close to Facebook to have that kind of
No, and Facebook's growing at a faster rate than anybody. Facebook is growing.
Not even Twitter is close.
Facebook's growing by like 3 Twitters a month. I mean, Facebook is growing. I don't know what the actual number is, but it's huge.
Well, last number I heard was 40 million, but it must be a lot bigger than
Facebook?
That.
Facebook? No, it's well over 200. I think it's
200 million. It's over 200 million.
Yeah.
And that's a fantastic last number I heard measure of user
300 somebody in
Twitter
chat
says.
300 now, I think. Now, and these, like by the way, as far as I know, are active users. This isn't even people who signed up for a Facebook account and haven't used it again. This is per month, 300 million people. I mean, that's huge power. And is one of the reasons I think we should really be pushing Facebook to be open. So I like your threat, Doug. You're going to be AOL if you don't open up. I told him you're going to be classmates.com if you don't open up. Now, that was a threat.
I mean, there's a big difference between, I think Will had it right. There's a big difference between an open platform and, you know, everything being public. Those are not all the same thing.
Right. But I agree with you. And I said that to them. And they said, well, I know, but we still think. I think
there's an interesting observation somebody made. He said most of the Facebookers I know are over 40. And Leo, you're a big user. My daughter doesn't have a Facebook page, and I don't know if my
son. Most of the people you know are over 40.
They say the same thing about Twitter. They say, "Oh, Twitter's really not."
I think Twitter
kids.
Is for an older demo. Yeah.
Isn't that odd that social networking has actually taken over with older people better than younger people? Why is that? Are we more social? We don't have any friends.
We're more tied to computers.
My daughter, who came back into the room, finally, she says, "We don't like to be surrounded by old farts."
So where are they going?
Neither do I.
Are they? Yeah, right. Who does? Are they going? Are they going to MySpace? Where are they going? Where are the kids going?
MySpace is dying.
Yeah, in fact, that's one of the stories. MySpace supposedly big layoffs on the way.
I don't think Facebook is full of old people. I think older people are now joining Facebook faster, but you got to remember what Facebook's roots were. It was as a college, a way for people in college to find each other at universities, and that's also where the privacy comes from. Is from its roots and the design of it originally, and I think that's kind of built into it, and it's hard for them to get away from it. But yeah, I don't think Facebook is mostly old people. I think that's who's getting on now.
Yeah, I agree.
One of you guys there said something like your mom or your grandmother.
Yeah, my mom.
But your mom's like my age.
Doesn't that say
old?
Your mom's probably much younger.
I mean, what would
I
it
am.
Take for something new to come along that was creative and interesting and that attracted younger people?
They're using Facebook.
We've gone from AOL to LiveJournal to MySpace to Facebook. What is that? The end? We're going to stop at Facebook? I don't see why.
Clearly not.
I agree with John. I think it's
and I think also Twitter has some legs there. I mean, I don't know a lot of kids my daughter's age, but she's gotten on Facebook on Twitter and has found it useful and is beginning to kind of evangelize it to her friends. She's the Jub. She asked me to mention her Facebook name. So she's the Jub. THEJUB. So you go follow her, treat her nice. More and more people who are younger, I think, are getting on Twitter. And I think the kind of the rap that it's for old people doing social networking is probably going to end soon.
I think what you're seeing is the universality of these platforms.
Right.
That as people start to realize, it doesn't happen until your friends are using it, but it sweeps through groups virally. So I remember in Facebook, the fastest growing town was Toronto, and Toronto was growing faster than like the whole United States because everybody was, there was this viral spread. And I think that's how it kind of goes.
It's because social networks are only useful if you have a network of people on them.
Right.
And so they inherently sweep through groups of people because one person tells the other person tells the other person.
Although Twitter's not quite that way because Twitter, follow people you don't know.
It's Twitter is not really a social network. Yeah. Twitter is kind of like a fan club.
So here's your daughter's site, The Jub. Everybody go see The Jub. My daughter's also on Twitter, by the way. In fact, she started using it more. But to actually give the lie to your daughter, John, my daughter, when she went to France as junior in high school, everybody that was going, she was going to be going to school with was on Facebook. They connected that way. They got to know each other that way. They stay in touch now that way. Everybody in her high school is on Facebook. I think that's... It's not for old farts. It's for everybody now. I think everybody's using it. That's how you get to 300 million active users. Mm-hmm. That's stunning.
And this endorsement has been brought to you by Facebook.
So,
the internet.
How many of you guys got your vanity URL?
I just got mine like 2 seconds ago. I literally just sat here and typed it in.
It's a good thing if you didn't do it. So you got Will Harris?
So I got Will Harris.
So
I got twitter.com/Will Harris. Facebook.com/Will Harris. I think I already had Channel Flip from the fan page.
Yeah, I think they did something weird with fan pages because I had Leo Laporte before this all happened.
I'm hoping somebody else takes mine so I can sue them later. Thank you, Tony La Russa.
Well, Tony's suing Twitter. They had a mechanism which I took advantage of. If you're a trademark holder, you could send a note to Facebook saying, I have a trademark on Twit, which I did. And they will monitor for people using your trademark and block it.
Wow.
But now they sent me a note back saying, we're kind of swamped right now, so it might be a little while before we do that. I think it's quite interesting. Denise Howell has a blog post on her ZDNet legal blog, Logarithms. I always confuse it with Blogarithms, by the way.
Which is my blog.
Which is your blog, Doug. 6 things to know if your Facebook username has been squatted. See, once you pick a name, you can't change it.
Right.
You're kind of stuck with it.
Can't get more than one.
Can't get more than one. It's kind of bad. I mean, I chose Chief Twit for my personal page, but, it's like getting a tattoo. What if, you know, in a few years I want to be a dignified fellow and now I'm stuck?
I'm sure if you call Mr. Zuckerberg, I'm sure he'll
take my calls.
Mr. Zuckerberg, Chief Twit on line 4.
Here's some things to keep in mind about username squatting. There is a form, the IP infringement form, that you can say, hey, I don't, you know. So this is on Denise's blog, 6 Things to Know. It's blogs.znet.com/Howell, H-O-W-E-L-L. Many jurisdictions, including California, where Facebook is headquartered, restrict or prohibit, I didn't know this, unauthorized use of a person's name, image, likeness, or unequivocal aspects of one's identity. So if somebody's posing as Doug K on Facebook and pretending to be you, not that their name is Doug K, you can't do anything about that. But if they're pretending to be the Doug K, you can pursue them. She said it's not squatting if somebody happens to share your name. And, you know, that's kind of the legal thing. Did you get Doug? Yeah, are you Doug K? Facebook.com/Doug.K. Doug.K. The dots.
Dots are invisible, huh?
Well, you could use it or not. Doesn't matter.
So what was that? Now, there was one other story you wanted to get to before we finished.
Yeah, the digital convergence.
We have 3 minutes left.
We have 3 minutes left. There's not much to say. I don't think, you know, it's funny. My friend,
you're talking about the
digital convergence. No, the digital analog to digital. A moment of silence for analog television, which died after a long and healthy life on Friday, June 12th, 2009.
So I guess it wasn't the big catastrophe they expected. They probably could have done this a year ago.
I don't know. I mean, they got 300,000 calls on Saturday. Oh. As I said, most of those calls were, it's not working.
Is that the FCC got the calls?
FCC.
Who's going to know to call the FCC?
Call the TV stations.
Yeah, yeah. If they knew to call the FCC, they would have known about the converter.
That's a good point. That's a good point. We should probably ask
TV stations, put a message on. Call the FCC.
Don't call us.
You know, my television's not working. I can't figure out how to use the television.
You know, the thing that's scandalous to me is how all the cable companies have used this as an excuse to befuddle people. Yo, the digital transition. This is something you probably don't have to deal with yet in
not
London.
I think we have another couple of years.
Yeah, but at some point it's going to happen. Mm. And the cable companies go, oh, the digital transition's happening. You better get a digital box, as if that had anything to do with anything.
Yeah, but you were talking earlier today.
They redigitized Petaluma. This is... Hello?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Hello?
So,
what phone is that? Is that the E71?
It's an analog clunker.
Oh, it's a real phone.
Analog.
Is it a princess, a pink princess phone, John?
Oh, I could see.
No, if I had those, believe me, I would love to collect a few of those.
You know, my wife wants me to buy desperately a phone that hangs on the wall in the kitchen, has a really long cord. She says, we keep losing the dang wireless phones. The kids keep taking them. I'm on a corded phone.
Well, that's what you do. You just get a cradle and
remember
get
that?
A coiled
remember
cord.
That? Right? Yeah, you have the really, really long coiled cord, and you kind of get it wrapped all around you.
It's funny how the more you go forward, the more you want to go back.
Yeah, please bring back cords.
That's what I have on my desk is a corded phone with a long cord because in a hurricane, when the power goes out, you want a corded phone. And so
and you want to be able
to make sure I have one.
You want to be able to carry it all the way into the bathroom.
The cellar.
So, but Comcast. John, do you have Comcast?
Yeah, I think it's Comcastic.
Yeah. So have you seen the spots that they're running telling you that if you have Comcast, whether you have a converter box or not, you don't need to change anything?
You know, we actually, if you watched the last Cranky Geeks we did, I think it was either the one that's run on, maybe it's the one running on Wednesday or the one last week. Somebody brought in the card that they're sending out to all their customers too, which has all this vague information. Oh, you're gonna lose this channel and that channel. You better get a hold of us. So it's very confusing. But I actually only have Comcast, but I really only used it for a Sling box and for my internet connection.
Their goal, they really want to go all. I remember this when we were at Tech TV. They want to be all digital because they can get more channels jammed in there. And FCC won't let them force customers to do this. I think there's a few more years before they could say, willy-nilly, you got to get a digital box. Customers don't want a cable box. I don't want a cable box. Who wants a cable box? So they're trying to trick you.
Well, but now they've made a technological change that requires it. They have disabled the analog channels. They don't tell you that.
Yeah.
They tell you if you're on Comcast, you're covered. So you know, they're doing it, you know, sort of area by area. We lost our analog channels about 45 days ago. And you have to get a DTA, it's called.
You have to get a box.
Yeah, it's, yeah, they've disabled analog. It's gone.
I thought they couldn't do that legally.
No, that's the scam. That's why. That's why I'm jumping up and down.
I think what's really interesting is that, you know, I think these companies really do realize the amount of cool and clever and money-saving and money-making stuff that you can do when you get people into digital. I read an amazing article yesterday about how, I guess the equivalent in the UK is Sky TV, which runs digital satellite, about how they're now doing user profiling based on what you watch, and they'll stream you your own, like, bespoke ads to insert into your TV service. And so they'll pick up what it is you like to watch, and they'll stream you the ad digitally that they think is going to be most relevant to you in your TV break. So you might be watching Lost on TV. The person next door gets, you know, like a Chrysler ad, but you're really interested in technology. You get a Microsoft ad.
But what's wrong with
that?
And
they store it on the hard drive.
Isn't that a good thing? Because then I'll see ads that I care about and not ads I don't.
Well, you can argue about whether it's good or bad, but you can't do that with analog.
Right. So another reason for them to go digital.
So it's just another reason for them to push digital.
I mean, about a year ago, they stopped sending the channel guide down Channel 11, where I live.
Right.
It just stopped. Channel 11 went empty. They didn't put another channel on it. And now you have to get the DTA to get that back.
You want a channel guide?
I hate the channel guide. But, you know.
You know what the most watched cable channel is? Always has been. The TV Guide channel.
Pathetic.
It's the most watched cable channel.
It's so fascinating.
Oh, look, people.
People just leave it on.
I think it must be the default in some way, and it's what's on.
Another way that the cable companies are trying to kind of push this onto people is with DVRs. You know, if you have a DVR, you don't need that either, and that actually makes a separate box something.
At least it's valuable.
Worth having.
Yeah.
Right. It has some value to it. I switched to UVerse a while back. They have that in our area. And, you know, it's basically works the same as cable, comes in over the phone lines, you know, great DSL service if you choose that. And so people where, you know, they have Verizon's Fios or where they have UVerse, you know, you're starting to get some choice, but it's not everywhere yet.
Well, so I lost my FM, too. That was a nasty problem.
Yeah, we used to be able to get radio on the cable.
So now you can't. DTA won't give you any audio outputs.
Now you're supposed to subscribe to the music channels.
Mm-hmm.
You're one of those old people. You should call the FCC. I just lost my radio,
but I happen to know the phone number of the FCC.
I got a call on the radio show this week from somebody who has. Remember those old radios that you could get TV stations on? She says, "What happens? You don't have those in the UK."
Yeah. What the heck is that?
In the U.S., you can buy a radio that tunes the television dial and listen to the radio, the TV on the radio, which is great. You know what? 90% of the time, it's plenty.
Yeah.
It's all I want.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. She said, what's going to happen? I said, it doesn't work anymore.
Do you know the iPhone app, Public Radio Tuner?
No, I don't know that.
PublicRadioTuner.org.
Okay.
Just before we go. Go to publicradiotuner.org.
There's a little freebie for y'all.
It's a nonprofit app. It's a great app. It's a version one is available now, and this gives you access, no matter where you are, to almost all the major public radio stations in the country.
You know, I use Wonder Radio, WUNDR, from Weather Underground, and it has the most complete list of everything, including all the public radio stations. So you don't have to be limited to that.
No, but does it give you the stations or just the listings?
No, you can listen on your iPhone. In fact, most of them work on Edge.
This works on Edge.
Yeah,
so this,
Wonder Radio, I'll give you a plug for this
thank
one.
Thank you. And what they're working on, coming soon, will be all of the public radio programs on demand.
This is nice, though. Yeah, many of them do that. KQED does it on demand.
Right, but on the phone, it's a beautiful
thing. I think people should be listening to podcasts.
Yeah, forget this radio. What's radio? Actually, the BBC, to their credit, has most of their shows on demand as well.
It does. They do. Well, they've
made
this new thing.
But you can listen on the audio.
So you can also, they make a lot of podcasts through the iTunes store or, you know, RSS, which you can get just downloaded. But of course, they've also got the iPlayer, which is their kind of, I guess, Hulu equivalent. Which you can watch on the iPhone. What's more exciting is that... Unless you're outside the UK, in which case you need to proxy your connection and you can wangle it. But What they're working on now, which is fantastic, is an open standard for set-top box on-demand over IP. So in 5 years' time, you know, theoretically, every TV will be built to a standard that includes IP streaming straight from the internet. So you can go BBC One, BBC Two, BBC
That's
Three,
great.
Twit.
That's awesome.
And you can create your own channel guide, and it can include any on-demand.
Will the TVs
service.
Have to be updated to do that? Or?
Well, there'll be new TVs.
Wow. There's actually a couple spec. Sony sets out there now that do that.
Yeah, the IPTV sets.
But that's a Sony
that's
standard.
That's the future.
Whereas BBC is creating an open standard.
Fantastic.
That anybody can contribute.
What's the name of the standard?
The code name of it is called the Canvas Project. And so the idea is that it'll just pipe any IP channel to your TV like any other channel of TV. And right. when that comes,
huge.
That is the
whole. It's all over. Right.
So
yeah, it's all over.
All video, all on demand.
Yeah.
That means DVRs go away completely because right. everything's at yeah. that
Well, it's
end.
A challenge and that we have because we do streaming video and we need to offer it downloadable so that you don't yeah. have, because you can't TiVo streaming video.
Yes, exactly.
So we need to solve that. Right. I think it's a small fraction of people who watch the downloads, but nevertheless, you got to offer
and
it.
And the ability then for indie
Huge.
Producers to be alongside.
Well, you do Channel Flip. This is, you must be thrilled.
Yeah, I'm quite excited at the prospect.
Well, that's great.
Well, two words. Bandwidth caps.
Yeah, in the U.S. Yeah. we've got
all
to fight
that video
that.
Bandwidth.
We've got to fight
good
that,
luck.
Baby. Yeah, right. Good luck is right. Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to buy this PRX. In fact, not only that, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Doug. I'm going to plug it. I'm giving next Mac Mania in about a month. I'm giving a lecture on 60 great iPhone apps. This will be one of them.
Hopefully, version two will be
app.
Up. And yeah. Version two
it looks
is
really
terrific.
Cool. Did you know about it already, Dwight? It's really cool.
Yes. In fact, I think version 2 is out. I think I have it.
It's in beta.
On my iPhone.
Oh, okay.
1.2
is what's
on the
store.
Really well. And the new one, the Wednesday night Technology Bytes radio show I do wasn't on the first one, and it is on the new one. So I was really happy about that. And we are on a Pacifica station, and not all of those are carried on apps like
That's
this.
Great. That's really great. Well, we're out of time, but what a great show this has been. I want to thank you so much for coming all the way from London, England. I mean, you Oxford, England, ladies and gentlemen. Will Harris.
Well, we flew out of London.
You flew out of London, so that counts.
So can I get a twitter.com/WillHarris plug? My numbers are minuscule compared to the mighty Laporte.
Can I get a tweet? Did you see the New York Times did a fairly scathing article on the suggested users list on Twitter? I was very happy
really?
To see them out that. Not scathing, but they revealed the truth about it, which is it has nothing to do with anything. So it's twitter.com/WillHarris. 1L Will Harris.
Someone get me over 14,000. I'm so close.
I think we can do that. You're currently at 13,880 followers. And a lovely background. What is that?
It's like a
ninja.
It's a cute ninja. It's from one of my favorite web comics, which is Little Gamers, little-gamers.com. A massively underread webcomic with some fantastic illustrations. It's from Sweden, so it's very, you know, pro Pirate Bay, etc.
Awesome. As is Sweden, apparently.
As is
7% of the vote for their EU representative going to the pirate.
Yeah, which is fantastic. Yeah. I mean, how exciting.
That's bizarre. I also want to thank you for coming out, Mr. Doug Kay of the Conversations Network. So good
thank
to
you.
See you. Proto-podcaster.
You can find me at Twitter, Doug Kay, but you can also see our new website, spokenword.org, which is a project I've been doing for about the last year, and it's almost working.
Tell me about that. What is going on?
Well, rather than try to grow our own podcasting, we realized that the new challenge is finding and sharing podcasting. So it's a site for finding and sharing everything in online spoken word. Video and
a
audio.
A meta site.
What's that? It's a meta site. Yeah, it's a meta site, and it's we've got over 250,000 objects in there now. We've got audiobooks, public radio shows, podcasts, you name it.
Ladies and gentlemen, also want to thank our good friend, Mr. Dwight Silverman, for joining us from the Houston Chronicle, blogs.cron.com/techblog. He is on Twitter also, D. Silverman on Twitter, and this guy is so wired. He is always on Twitter, so he has to put an apology on Twitter when he's not going to be there to do the show.
Well, it's just I want people to like me.
Well, 5,844 people like you, Doug.
And that's thanks to you, because every time I'm on here, I get, you know, another 1,000 followers.
I'm glad to plug your Twitter. We have the Twit suggested users list. It's much, much better than the official.
You ought to do that. Actually, that would be quite cool. Your suggested users list.
We could do that. All you have to do is go to my Twitter account and look at who I follow. That's kind of who I would suggest you follow. Everybody's got a different Twitter. John, of course, the real Dvorak. John C. Dvorak, thanks for being here today.
Always a pleasure. And don't forget channeldvorak.com, which you have there on the
I do.
Thing.
It's on the
Chiron.
Thing. On the Chiron.
And yeah, I'd like to get to 55,000 before midnight tonight on my Twitter account. I only need 200. Would you please help me out there?
Oh, you show off.
Everybody's shilling.
Who started it? Will did.
What is the picture? Is that the Swedish flag? What is that for your
icon? That's a semaphore for the letter D, which...
It's about as obscure as you can get, John.
But curiously, somebody pointed out to me that it also, if you just run it by itself on a boat, this is a boat flag that's for the letter D, when people like to signal to each other. It means when it's running by itself, distress, a boat out of control, look out.
Couldn't be more appropriate for your icon. I love that. Look out. The real Dvorak
is out of control.
I'm Leo Laborde. We thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit. Oh, wait a minute.
Ellen Feist.
Ellen Feist.
And by the way, there's a bunch of people betting on whether you would or not.
Play Ellen Feist?
No, there's a bunch of people in the chat room saying, I'll bet you $10 he doesn't play it, even though he promised he would.
And actually, Leo, that aired. That did air.
It aired?
Yes.
Yeah.
It did air, but only briefly. Didn't they pull it?
Right. Right, well, they aired like a few times.
Because otherwise we wouldn't have it if it hadn't aired, I guess. Yeah. Or maybe they put it. I thought they maybe put it on a website
on the PC, and it was like beep 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 beep, and then like half of my paper was gone.
So I lit up a doobie and got relaxed.
It's empowered.
Oh, look at her
paper. It was really good paper.
The size of a pupil.
And then I had to write it again, and I had to do it fast, so it wasn't as good.
Was this a real spot?
Yeah. It was one of the first Switch spots.
It's a bummer.
And I read the story about that.
Bummer.
I'm Ellen Feist, and I'm
speaking.
And I'm high as a kite.
She'd gone on set, or she'd have gone to a company.
She says it was cough syrup.
Who was auditioning for it. And she'd gone to accompany somebody else, and they were.
She wasn't there to be on the show.
She wasn't there to be on it, and she suddenly had this story, and they said this is amazing. The only problem was she'd been on some kind of drastic pain medication, so she was kind of hopped up on the pain medication, which they didn't realize, and it was only kind of afterwards when they put it out. Well, I think Apple is very stoner chic.
I got to play it one more time. Now that you say that, I think we should end the show with the lovely. Heidi Fleiss. Not Heidi Fleiss.
No, that was entirely different.
She was a madam. Ellen Feist.
Ellen Feist.
Not Heidi Fleiss.
No.
Although we could end the show with Heidi Fleiss, too. But
that would possibly get us in prison.
There's a second one. There's another one.
Oh, no. Let's find it.
The other one didn't air.
I'm sure that... here's the second one.
Ellen Feist strikes back.
If you're going to do one, do two, right?
I've seen the second one.
Take it someplace fun. Skiing or something, The beach and by the pool. It's really fast and I just got it and it's silver and it's really exciting and the sound quality is really good and I don't have to watch airplane movies anymore. You got your feet in the sand and you're typing away and it's fun. I was thinking about how my friends were doing their homework at home and I was like, wow, this is really great. Yeah, I really love my G4.
Oh my God!
Marvelous!
Oh. I never saw that one. That's interesting.
Have you ever seen this one?
Get your
favorite.
iPod.
Oh yeah,
iPods here. I sell iPods at Dodger games. Two, and then you got to pass them down, kind of the way they sell hot dogs. I got about 1,500 in the trunk of my car. I'm usually shirtless, just for effect. The money just starts flowing in. Could listen to all these songs. I say at least over 50 songs. I'm not quite sure of the amount. I think it's like 2 million songs. My name is Will Ferrell, and I'm a porn actor.
We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can.
A tech nerd, but a tech nerd, mama said. Leo LeBron and a Kevin Rose, don't tell me to. A tech nerd, but a tech nerd, mama said. And don't you worry, are you in an ad hole? I'm gonna give you props on, but a tech nerd song, yeah. I used to be so cool, but now I'm just a laugh at you. A tech nerd, but a tech nerd, mama said. To drop the reggae styles, but then in 06, I done dropped the Twit podcast on my iTunes list.
I used to slick my hair back, man, on the cool guy shit. Rocking MTV live cribs on a gangster tip. But I done click subscribe on Twitter, man, that was it. But first I started with LaPorte, then I jumped to Kevin Hall's. And now the Dignation Show got spin laughing. All smart Alex Albright done moved in with his girl. And you know that lends hope to a sap like me. Maybe I can do this in half, man, a half nerd. But I have to, I listen to them tech nerds say. Leo LaPorte. Kevin Rawls, come tell me to a tech nerd, but a tech nerd, mama say. Leo LaPorte and a Kevin Rawls, come tell me to a tech nerd, but a tech nerd, mama say. And don't you worry, are you in an ad host? I'm gonna get your props on, but my tech nerd song, yeah. I used to be so cool, but now I'm just a laugh at you. A tech nerd, but a tech nerd, mama say. You know, I once was cool, rebelled against the Uncle Sam, but now desensitized and so conformed to the Merlin man. Bring the rain, complain. Until the cat comes home, the Vorax sky has fallen out of two. We've grown to love, but the scene has buzzed out loud. Updates here every day. Tom Merritt and Miss Molly with them on those Mac she hates. But Calacanis be sarcastic. Patrick Norton, great Veronica. All my bad girls, not all them. She's Mary Wayne. Will Harris with his accent. I'm feeling Wayne. I rock the Twit podcast. My photos looking great. See, I'm half man, a half nerd, but I have to. A lesson to them tech nerds. Leo LaPorte and a Kevin Rawls done turn me to a tech nerd, but a tech nerd, mama say. Leo LaPorte and a Kevin Rawls turn me to a tech nerd, but a tech nerd, mama say. Don't you worry, are you in the net hopes? Cause I gave you props on a tech nerd song, yeah. I used to be so cool, but now I'm just a lack of you. Oh, but a tech nerd, but a tech nerd, mama say. Leo LaPorte and a Kevin Rawls done turn me to a tech nerd, but a tech nerd, mama say. Leo LaPorte. A tech nerd, but a tech nerd, mama say.
Download this song free at questpoetics.com.